Blueberry.
Oh my God. Can you believe it?
Unbelievable.
I never believed the support for this thing, Harry.
The Build Back Better bill, Pat, was approved in the House this morning.
Yeah. Wait a second. You're just diving right into details, Harry.
No, not into details.
Yeah. You want to go right into the meat of it, you know, yeah. And perhaps other people you want to know about other things going on. And you know what I do want to say, because I have to take accountability. You've been saying for gosh, I think maybe the last 8 to 10 weeks, we really appreciate those of you who've stuck with us, that this has been absolutely a fluid development. I think I went out there publicly last week, and I might have said that I didn't think that we would see prescription drug negotiated price reform in the budget reconciliation bill. I did. And I also don't think I listened to you as much as I should have about my ducks, because they seem to be doing okay when it gets cold. And actually, bizarrely, two more have come to the pond. So instead of 12, I'm up to 14.
Look at you.
So I have to say, as always, Swami, you are right. Yes. Thank you.
And just so everybody knows, Barry's pond is actually a kiddie pool in the back of his house.
Yes.
So, you know.
No. I live in North Carolina. It's an above ground pool.
It's an above ground kiddie pool. It's with a Little Mermaid motif going on.
How did you know? So it's,
yeah, I knew. I know. I know you.
It was obvious. And, yeah. Obvious. Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, Harry, I know you wanted to dive right into it.
I did.
Today is actually an exciting day. Can you tell us what has happened this week? What changed this morning?
Well, so there was a long debate last night. Minority Leader McCarthy held the longest floor speech. I think it was 8 hours last night, kept going and going and going. It was pretty ugly, but the speaker manages somehow with very small margins to get these bills done. And this is something that we said was most likely going to happen with the speaker. She got it over the finish line. One Democrat voted against it. All the Republicans voted against it. So it passed with a vote of 220. Now it goes over to the Senate. And if you thought it was ugly in the House, it's going to be like Uma Thurman and David Carradine in Kill Bill in the Senate. It's going to be a really rough go over there. So all these provisions, Republicans are ready in the Senate to challenge a lot of these provisions under what's called the Byrd Rule. That means that the Republicans and the Democrats are going to have to litigate all these provisions in front of the Senate parliamentarian, and the parliamentarian will have to make a ruling on each one of these provisions. Then the bill will most likely significantly change by the time the Senate is done. I would venture to say that the Senate will be done by 2022, early 2022 in January. If it does get done. And then it's going to go back to the House, a different bill, which is going to cause some problems, I would think, with progressives and the congressman from Queens, Queens, New York, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and her crew. So it's going to be a very interesting process.
So pause, because you said 2022.
Yeah. So January.
Yeah,
we'll be into the new year.
I know that January is 2022. But I thank you for educating me here.
Just making sure you knew.
Yeah. I'm working on it. Yeah. So at this point, you're saying that again. I don't want to put you down for it, but you're saying two things. One, it hits the Senate, and there's still a lot of work that has to be done. And then it has to go back to the House when those changes are made. And that is likely to happen next year to get completely resolved.
Correct.
What's the biggest, if you're sitting back, now we're there's lots of stuff in the legislation, but on the healthcare side of the equation, what are the most controversial pieces that you could see getting chopped out?
Well,
or modified?
Obviously Medicare expansion is going to be an issue that's going to be looked at. There's also some progressives in the Senate that would like to see Medicare expansion expanded. Right now it's just covering one piece, hearing. By the time it gets over to the Senate, I know Bernie Sanders and some others would like to see vision and dental be included as part of that package. So, there are issues that are going to be discussed. Obviously we've got inflation that is getting worse. We've got gas prices getting worse. We've got supply chain problems getting worse. The president's approval ratings are getting worse. The vice president's approval ratings are getting worse. So all of these things factor in at the end, factor into getting this bill over the finish line. And it's going to be very difficult. I want to mention one more thing. The polling right now, the generic poll right now, has Republicans ahead by 10 points. Actually, I think it's even by 13 points right now. So I want to reference that for a second. And just, this is, I think, what Democrats in the House and Senate are also looking at. When you've got the generic poll and with Republicans 13 points ahead, I just want to remind everybody, in 1994, when the red wave happened and Republicans took both the House and Senate, Republicans were polling 5 points under on the generic poll. Today, they're polling 13 points over. So you've got Republicans in the House that are estimating anywhere between 45 and 60 seat pickup in the House. If you have that big of a gains in the House, it can only be gains in the Senate as well. Because at that point, people aren't really voting for the candidate. They're just voting for the letter after their name, whether it be an R or D, right? So this could be a very significant sea change come 2022. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but all indications right now are that it very well could happen, which again plays into the Build Back Better bill moving in the Senate. And I know in the on the last podcast we had, we referenced 1993 and the Clinton budget reconciliation bill in 1993, which was moved in the House. It was approved, but it didn't go anywhere in the Senate.
All right,
we had that Republican wave.
I know. But you and I both know it's a long haul in 2022. And
that's right.
50 different things could happen along the way. And I know you'd like to wax philosophic for an hour, which is why we actually put a timer. And then our producer actually gives us the debate 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. I'm going to ask you to pay attention to it in the near future.
Well, she keeps moving her finger along her throat.
Yeah. And then she puts her camera off too. So you never really know, like, is she throwing things across the room?
Oh, she's freaking out.
Yeah, probably. All right, look, we have a guest again with us today, and very excited to have Lindsey Ryan join us again. For those of you who don't know, Lindsey is one of our colleagues. And she, in 45 seconds or less, is going to explain to us, we'll give you 47, what has been going on with the OSHA regulations and also the CMS regulations related to vaccine policies. So everybody, welcome, Lindsay. I see you're smiling. She's not sure. She's saying to herself, why is she on this thing again? Okay, Lindsay, what is going on?
All right. Well, hey, guys. I think since the last time we talked, the only federal mandate that had come out at that point was the federal contractor mandate, which had come out in September 2021. And so the number of employers subject to federal contracts were kind of grappling with that, and then all of the state healthcare vaccine mandates. But since that time, the hotly anticipated OSHA emergency temporary standard came out, which is the large employer vaccine mandate that applies to employers with 100 or more employees. And then also the CMS rule that you mentioned, which applies to most Medicare and Medicaid certified providers and suppliers to have their staff members, which includes some of their contractors in the facilities, to be vaccinated. That OSHA ETS for large employers is what we call a soft mandate, where it does give employers the option of having their employees either vaccinated or tested weekly, whereas the CMS rule is a hard mandate. So you have to be vaccinated if you're at one of those facilities, unless you have an approved exemption.
Pause for a second. There were two key terms. One, large employers under OSHA. So what is a large employer for purpose of the rule?
A large employer is going to be any employer with over 100 employees. But it's also important to note that this only applies to the states that are governed by federal OSHA. There are a number of states that we call state plan states that have their own approved state OSHA plans. And those states have 30 days to either adopt the federal OSHA standard or to adopt and create their own, at least as effective, plan. So if you are in one of those states, and I think there's 22 of them that cover private employers, California, where I sit, is one of them, then you wait to see what your state OSHA plan will do. But no doubt it has to be at least as effective as that federal OSHA. With the major caveat, which is, you know, what I'll kind of cover quickly next, is that right now the OSHA ETS has stayed, because as expected, within hours of the OSHA ETS, or really, I guess it was a day of the ETS being released, we saw a number of state coalitions challenge and file lawsuits in various circuit courts of appeal. Because it's a challenge to the OSHA rules, special rules allow them to kind of bypass the district courts and go straight to the courts of appeal. So we saw a number of lawsuits around the country. I think we ended up having lawsuits in 12 different circuits. And they just on Tuesday had a lottery where they literally, a clerk picks a ping pong ball out of a drum.
Oh, so that was just like Powerball, basically. Yeah. Did they have that machine, you know, that was going and the balls came down? And
it's actually written into law that you have to pull a ping pong ball out of a drum, hilariously enough.
And then they had what on each ball? They had the circuit listed.
Exactly.
You can watch it on public access television.
Oh, you could. Do they also have the judge, or is it just the circuit that was listed?
Yeah, it's a good question. Circuit was the winner of that lottery draw. And to back up a little, the Fifth Circuit earlier the week before had put a stay in place that, you know, halted enforcement of the OSHA ETS. And then they extended that temporary stay even further, kind of pending this lottery. Now that the Sixth Circuit won, the Sixth Circuit is a conservative circuit. And so I think everyone is expecting that probably the Sixth Circuit will uphold that stay. And they will be the circuit to kind of make the final decision on these consolidated lawsuits, subject, of course, to the Supreme Court's review.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, you just used the word final. And this is the kind of matter that could hit an expedited fast track to the Supreme Court. You know, regardless of the decision, there will be people on both sides on this particular issue for sure. I'm curious though, in terms of what was in the regulation, did they clearly define the exemptions that may exist for healthcare or religious beliefs?
It's never very clear. I'll start with the CMS rule, because the CMS rule is where the exemptions really matter, because that's the hard mandate where there's no testing option.
That's right.
Unless you have an approved exemption. And what CMS has said is that the exemptions that can be granted under that rule track federal law, which would be the religious exemptions under Title VII or medical exemptions under the ADA. The only slight difference, which is consistent with most of the vaccine mandates we've seen, is that the CMS exemption for medical reasons is a little bit broader than we would normally see for disability accommodations, because normally you have to go through an analysis to decide if someone has a qualifying disability. CMS has been very clear that we're not looking for an actual disability. We're just looking for any medical condition that would be a contraindication to the vaccine. So if you fall into the religious exemption bucket or the medical condition bucket, then your employer can grant you an exemption. And then it's the employer's job to figure out what additional safety measures might be appropriate to feel comfortable having that person in the workplace unvaccinated.
Right. So we're still back at the trying to figure out some pieces of this. One of the things you did say, because we've had a fair amount of questions on this, you said certified providers and a hard mandate. Medicare does distinguish between certified providers and then other suppliers. Physicians are considered suppliers, and the rule as drafted and released applies to certified providers, which typically include your bricks and mortar facilities like hospitals, long-term care facilities, and a few other certified providers. So the rule does differentiate even in the Medicare bucket as we exist right now. And physicians are exempt from the CMS rule, correct?
That's exactly right. The only exception to that would be if you have physicians that are going into a facility that's covered under the rule. But in general, your typical physician's office would not be covered.
Yeah, that's been a question too. And I expect there'll be comments that have been filed because physicians go into hospitals, lots of different other organizations go into hospitals for a variety of reasons, discharge planning, supplies, equipment, folks that would not ordinarily be subject walking into the hospital could change the whole calculus the way the rule is drafted.
Yeah. And I think that has actually been the biggest hangup that our clients have been having, is that if you have individual providers that are going into covered facilities, it's ultimately the facility's job to comply with the rule. And so trying to figure out for those providers that are not the facility's employees, is that facility responsible for reviewing and granting the exemption to that physician, for example, or is the physician responsible for granting themselves the exemption as their own employer and then notifying the facility, don't worry, we're in compliance. Everyone coming into your facility is either fully vaccinated or has been granted an exemption by their employer. And it's not really clear under the CMS rule, nor is there a clear answer to that question under the law. So I think, a lot of hospitals are saying we don't have the capacity or the manpower to field exemptions for every staff or contractor that's coming into our facility. And so trying to navigate how to put those procedures in place has been really tricky.
I mean, that's a real world problem. I worked in a hospital many moons ago, remained anonymous. And I think we had almost 7,000 employees. And there are many points of entrance to a hospital, and folks that are coming in and out of the hospital all day long. And what do they do, Lindsay? Do they create a TSA style entrance gate to check them and ask for their vaccine card? Like how is that supposed to work?
Yeah, good question. And that's what everyone's trying to figure out right now. I think where a lot of clients are landing, and it's not clear that this is the appropriate way to do it, but I'm sure CMS will tell us at some point, is that for their own employees, they have HR infrastructure to reach out to those employees and secure their vaccination or their exemption. And for any contractors, what they're doing is just reaching out to any of their contractors saying, we need you to provide a certification, a signed certification under penalty of perjury, saying that you have screened all of your own employees that are coming into our facility, and you can confirm with us that they're either all vaccinated or have an approved exemption and will abide by these safety measures. And it's not clear that that's necessarily compliant with the rule, but I think that's the best everyone can do right now.
We got another wrinkle in the mix now too, which is, Dr. Fauci did come out yesterday and say that there is a rise in hospitalizations among vaccinated yesterday. So that is going to add another wrinkle here, I think, with regard to, you know, vaccinated, with, you know, vaccinated versus unvaccinated. But first, Lindsay, let me just say thank you so much for coming back on. We had the most listeners when you were on, so you're great. You're the best. But my question to you is, how do you feel about handicapping the ruling that we're going to be seeing coming down the pike here with the OSHA reg
for private employers? If anything you've learned, Lindsay, you can put out your view on the podcast and you can be wrong.
Nobody's going to hold you to it.
It's all right.
Nobody's good. I'm like Connie Chung and Newt Gingrich's mother between us.
I've done enough media appearances to know never to take
it's Friday, folks. What can I say?
I mean, so, you know, there are also, I should say, plenty of challenges that now have been lodged against the CMS rule and the federal contractor rule, although neither of those rules have been stayed. I think both of those rules are going to be very tough to challenge. Might they be stayed at some point in the near future, pending final rulings, maybe, but I think those are going to be really tough to overturn when we're talking about rules that the federal government is setting as a condition of funding that's going to people. But with the OSHA ETS, I think that is on the nice right now. And I'm a little bit less confident that is going to survive.
Well, I kind of look at it in the same vein as CDC mandating that, you know, people don't have to pay rent, right? I think it's going to go, at least in my view, and I'm not a lawyer, but in my view, I think it's going to be going in that direction. But thank you. Thank you for that. And thanks for looking into your crystal ball. We appreciate it.
Yeah. We'll have you back and we'll see if you're right. Between now and then, we're going to let the lottery roll. And, you know, I really wish I could have seen that.
Yeah.
But by the way, the CMS rule is interim final, and there are comments that are being submitted, opportunities to submit comments. And I know that you would help all of our clients and everybody in the free world submit comments in your spare time doing that. But right?
I mean, yeah. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Okay. So, lots of development. Lindsay has also put on some webinars, at least one webinar. I'm told that Sinead, she has something like 373 questions or something like that, that she has to get back to for everybody. And that will keep you busy in and of itself. But anyways, I want to thank you again for joining us.
Listen to that applause. Listen to that.
Impressive.
I don't know if that was sufficient for Lindsay. So there you go.
A lot of people in your house, Barry.
Yeah, they love you.
It's all the ducks. That's what it is.
All right, check back in with us. We'll give you a buzz and have a great day.
Thank you, everyone.
All right, Harry, do you have any final pearls of wisdom today?
I wish I did. The only pearls of wisdom I'm going to have, I know we briefly touched on this before we started the recording, but stay away from anything caustic. I guess that's really what I come down to. Be positive and let's all have a great Thanksgiving.
Yeah, everyone. Happy Thanksgiving. It's been a long 2 years. It has really
sure
been a
is.
Long 2 years. And it's put a lot of stress, I think, on families, friends. Many of us have been connected to those that have lost family members or friends, close ones. And clearly, we're not out of this yet. So happy Thanksgiving, turkey. And I don't know if we're going to record next week. It just depends how much we eat. No, Sinead is shaking her head no. But I think she's just shaking her head no because she absolutely just doesn't want to see us on Friday because she's not going to be here. All right. Thanks again, guys.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Lindsay.
Have a good one. Bye-bye.
We want to remind listeners that the choice of a lawyer and lobbyist is an important decision and should not be based solely on advertising. The information and discussions in this podcast do not constitute legal advice and listeners should consult legal counsel regarding their specific subject matter. Thank you for listening to Inside Law, a podcast produced by Polsinelli.